Well, hello, hello. Welcome back to Orchid Blooms Podcast. Welcome back, bloomers. My name is Orchid Brown, and I am your host with Orchid Blooms Podcast. You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter at Orchid I Brown. On today's episode, we will be talking about unconscious bias. After publishing Women Against Women, Masculine and Feminine Energy, even competition between the sexes, I realized that my thought process has been based on unconscious bias. I cannot help but judge people. I really can't. I have tried to change that habit, but have been unsuccessful. Writing and recording these podcast episodes has helped with my growth in thinking outside the box and just kind of seeing people in a different perspective. And that is one of the reasons why I appreciate my podcast episode, because it has been the best therapy that I have ever had. When it comes to relationships, we all have unconscious bias. This could have resulted from our upbringing and our childhood traumas, history, culture, and our general experience over the years. Relationships and our experience in relationships can also help our unconscious bias become rogue. We have been hearing the term used to explain racism. With the Meghan and Harry situation with the royal family, it seems that people who aren't knowledgeable about the term believe that it is only associated with racism. And I'm not speaking for everyone, but there are some people that just associate unconscious bias as strictly in the category of racism, but it is not. It is a politically correct word or term that was used to explain something so disgusting as racism. But I would like to explore the term in regards to relationships and friendships. And even though my focus is on relationships and friendships, understand that unconscious bias can also happen in the workplace and every area of your life. You could even go on vacation and experience unconscious bias in any environment. It doesn't really matter. But for this podcast episode, I really wanted to explore how that affects relationships and friendships and the individual as a whole. The definition of unconscious bias are social stereotypes about certain groups of people that individuals from outside their own conscious awareness. That is the definition that I found. We all struggle with unconscious bias. It is not just a term used to explain away racism. We carry unconscious bias in relationships with everyone, including friendships. I have experienced unconscious bias from people in the workplace, from people of my own culture, in relationships and friendships, which is quite surprising. Everyone holds unconscious bias, and I am no exception to that rule. The five types of unconscious biases are: number one, gender bias. Gender bias is a stereotypical belief about someone based on gender. We have two genders, male and female. Each gender has a bias against each other, but we also are aware that each gender has a bias against their own. Based on what I have explained in many different podcasts before this one, most recently, Women Against Women, gender bias is used by other women to tear another woman down. The funny part about this is that the women that use gender bias against other women usually can't live up to the standards that they place on other women. It's almost as if they are trying to distract you from their own flaws. As for the opposite sex, it is used to control, to demean, to manipulate, and to boost egos. We all have our strengths and weaknesses. Can we truly say that a specific gender is more superior? This seems to be the debate stretching over centuries. Don't get me wrong, men suffer from this as well. Comments such as, you aren't a man, you're too soft. Terms such as these are considered unconscious bias. What is wrong with a man being sensitive, vulnerable, and expressive? I brought up the Women Against Women podcast episode for an example for gender bias because a lot of the things that I talked about in that podcast episode are women using gender bias against each other to somehow build their own ego. And they seem to find purpose in this as well. And so over time, as you truly pay attention to the situation that you are in, you tend to realize that it's just a means to empower themselves. It's just a means to tear another woman down because that woman is feeling insecure. And as I said as well, they cannot live up to the standards that they're placing on other women. And it's just so sad. Weaponizing gender bias against your own can always flip back right onto you. And then you find yourself being judged by so many people based on this gender bias that you have inflicted on other people. And that is called karma. Let's move on to the second unconscious bias, which is beauty bias. This happens when people form conclusions or opinions about others based on their appearance. You may receive favor due to your looks rather than your character, your skill, experience, or performance. You hear stories of women being hired so that the boss could sleep with them. Don't get me wrong, this happens to men as well. I just find that men aren't embarrassed by it as women have. And it's so strange when I talk to a female that maybe I met while, you know, working downtown Ottawa. And, you know, she just wanted to talk for a moment. And then she just starts explaining her experience to you. And I said, you know, how do you feel knowing that you just finished university, you're looking for a job, and you interview at a few places, and one of them finally decides to hire you, and to come to find out 3 months later that this person was only hiring you because they wanted to sleep with you? And she said, well, I felt like shit, because it made so much sense to her why this person didn't bring up anything on her resume. Did not ask her about her previous experience whatsoever, was too busy sitting there smiling at her and having casual conversations as if it was a date. And I said, what kind of behavior did this person that hired you exhibit, you know, through the 3 months that you were working there? And she said that he would try to invite her out after work to have drinks with him, and she would always shut it down by saying, unfortunately, I can't go out to drinks with you personally, privately. I'm going to my boyfriend's place. And I said, okay, when you talk to your boyfriend about this, how does he feel about it? And she said, all he would say to me was, you know, do what you got to do to make some money. And I thought to myself, why are you still with this guy? And of course, I'm thinking this to myself, but I said it out loud, not realizing that I did. And she was like, honestly, I don't know. And I said, are you keeping him as a shield of protection to stay in this job? And she's like, yeah, actually, I haven't dumped him just for that purpose alone, just to have him be that symbol that you need to back off, sir. And I said, but it's not working because he's still attempting to invite you out to drinks. He's still trying to get you alone somehow, trying to convince you that if you want to keep your job, he's not saying it, but if you want to keep your job, you need to fuck him. And she's like, yeah, he does give a lot of these messages as well, but I'm just trying to act like I don't see it and ignore it. And I thought, damn, Like, you just got out of university and you're already dealing with sexual harassment in the workplace. But I mean, how do you complain to HR about that when HR usually protects their own, right? That's why she was hired. They're not going to let go of the manager for doing this. And she's like, yeah. I was like, I wish I could give you advice on what to do. I just hope you are looking for a job. She's like, yeah, once I got this job, I was actively looking. When I noticed that, you know, he would start to come behind me, get a little bit too close, start touching my back and my shoulders, moving my hair, commenting on how I smell every day. She's like, it's very uncomfortable. So I made sure to start looking for a job. And when she was saying this, I was like, I guess nothing's coming up then because you're still there. She's like, yeah, I'm trying really hard. And I said, your boyfriend's not even helping you at all. He's like, no. Sometimes he'll even say after work, when I was like, oh, let's go have dinner or something, he'll be like, oh, what did your boss say today? And she would say, oh, you know, he invited me out to drinks. And he's like, oh, you should go. And he's like, she's like, what? And he says, yeah, you should go. And so she finally just kind of confronted her boyfriend and said, what would you think if I slept with my boss to keep this job? And he's like, listen, I completely understand. And I was like, girl, your man sound like a loser. Let him go. And she's like, I'm working up to it. I just kind of need to figure out a way to make it seem like I'm still in a relationship without letting my boss know as I let him go. So she was in the planning phase of all of this, but she was fresh out of university. She's still a babe. Like, she doesn't even know how to handle this situation. So things go a bit slower for her because she's learning as she goes how to deal with this. And it was just sad to hear this. And then, of course, I've mentioned in previous podcast episode or one of the previous podcast episode where I talked about this guy who was a director in the government. And, you know, I confronted him one day because I rented an apartment to him. And, you know, I rented the apartment to him for his mom. I guess he didn't want to put her in a home. And so he decided to get a 2-bedroom apartment for him and his mom. And I'm thinking in my mind, like, buddy, you're like in your 40s. What are you doing? Why don't you have a house? Why haven't you had a plan this entire time? That's what I was thinking in my mind. Thank God I kept my mouth shut, because sometimes I think and it just comes out. But it didn't in this situation. I was like, whew, thank God. And he started telling me stories about how, you know, contract workers would come into the government and how he would just kind of flirt with them and talk to them. I guess he was trying to brag to me because he didn't realize we worked in the exact same department, just not on the same floor. So he's telling me all of this. And he was just like saying, you know, he'll invite some of these new girls that come in on contracts out to drinks, and he'll, you know, enter into a sexual relationship with them. And when their contract is about to be up, he just acts like he doesn't know them. So they got the message that their contract's up, you're done. And I look at him and I said, are you sure you wouldn't get caught for this? You won't be fired for this? He's like, oh no, I know a lot of other directors and we're all close and we all have each other's back. And I was like, ah, so this is like something that was happening in the organization that I worked for. And I couldn't believe it. I just could not believe it. So when she started telling me the story, everything just started clicking, that a lot of male and female, don't get me wrong, male and female, I'm not trying to throw men under the bus, it's just most of the stories that I know of are pertaining to what women are experiencing. But again, some of the stories that I was hearing about men that were in this type of situation, they loved it. They felt like they were hot shit. They were like, yeah, I got this. Look at her. She's hiring me just because she wants some of this dick. Woo! You know, that's how they behave. So I didn't really see it as something bad. But when they start flirting with me, I was like, buddy, you're a hoe. You're getting paid for dick, basically. You do realize that. What am I supposed to do with a hoe? What if she has, like, STD? What if she has a fucking yeast infection? Do you know how much yeast infections hurt a woman that has a sensitive private area because she keeps it clean? It burns. It's the most uncomfortable experience if your vagina is not like rock hard. You know what I'm saying? So All I had to say to him was like, buddy, I understand that your dick is free and you're basically community dick, but I think you should just stick to passing your dick around for money. While you're still working, you're also leaving work, buying a meal for this girl and drinks and getting free pussy. I just feel that I am just not your type. I think you should stick to what you're doing, flaunt your looks, be as gorgeous as you possibly can, and give whichever woman is willing to hire you the Z, right? So that's what I said to the guy, and I never spoke to him again. But that's the only example that I have of men being in this gender bias situation. But let's continue. I am not finished. So a part of beauty bias is appearance. As I said, the way a woman or a man looks can garner favor. In the workplace, you can get away with anything based on your appearance. In relationships, you are treated a certain way just based on your looks and appearance. If you show no flaws with your partner, I'm telling you, they will treat you well. They will put you on a pedestal. But that moment your mask cracks in any way, or they walk into that bathroom and your shit actually stank, you're done. That image will be forever broken. But while we're talking about appearance doesn't always mean what you can see. The looks of their eyes, their nose, the structure of their face, how beautiful their breast is, how big their ass is, how tiny their waist is. Appearance is more than that. It could be the type of clothes that you're wearing. Let's talk about that. The stereotype, and this is a nice example that I like to use, and I've used it before. The stereotype that all black men have big schlong, the big dick. That is a stereotype. I can attest to that. And a lot of women go after black men for that purpose. Black men have had this stereotype work in their favor. You know, if they have a big schlong, they really know how to use it. You are going to have the best sex of your life. And in some cases, some women that might work. And in other cases, women that desire a more emotional connection, it doesn't matter how big your dick is, it's just not going to do anything for her. So that is what I mean by appearance can be more than just what you see on the surface. Again, you're wearing clothes. Unless you're wearing a tight ass pants to show the what's going on down there, that's the only way someone is going to really see it. But then a lot of people can look at someone and say, I know you got it. I know you got that big schlong. I'm going to pursue you just so I can have that, like, that big schlong. Again, a lot of women in certain positions will hire people just so they can get that big schlong. And I think the only example that I can use, I don't have an example, but this is something that was on my mind as I was talking about beauty bias. And this was in the Ottawa Sun here. A woman that worked at Parliament Hill, which is our government, because I live in the capital of Canada, which is very, very much government. And she worked at Parliament Hill. I think her name was Chantal. I don't know her name, but she was a Quebecois. And while she was there, there was a general that was in the Canadian Forces that would come in, and he would have meetings at Parliament Hill and speaking with certain higher-ups, including the Prime Minister of Canada. And every single time she sees him, she would just thirst for him. I mean, the hunger was real, to the point that she would pursue him. And every single time she sees him, she would like run up to him and she would say, hey, you know, I'm really feeling you. We should maybe go to a hotel, you know, and just kind of let's get your dick wet. You know what I'm saying? And he would always reject her. So it came to a point, like after the third time of him rejecting her, he just had a problem with it. So he actually filed a sexual harassment against her for that. For her persisting and pushing because he felt uncomfortable. He was never interested in her. Keep in mind, this man is gorgeous, like tall, beautiful, wearing his nice uniform, nice structured, speaks a certain way. And here comes this midget coming out of nowhere, doesn't have it together whatsoever. Her appearance is just not there. You would never catch him hitting that out of desperation. That's basically the message that he was sending. Like, I would need to be truly desperate to be with a porcupine. You understand? Like, that's the way she kind of looked. And so when that came out, I believe that they suspended her, but I'm sure they fired her shortly afterwards because it got into the newspaper, and that's how majority of the people in Ottawa heard about it. And it was a good laugh. It was a really good laugh. Like, how many times does a dude need to tell you that he don't want you before you realize that he don't want you? Like, he literally had to file a sexual harassment claim against you to get you to stop making him sick. To this day, I still laugh about that story. To this day, all I remember is her first name, Chantal. Don't ask me what her last name is. And you know how they say it in Quebecois, Chantal. Anywho, let's get on with this podcast talking about beauty bias. The idea that a person that wears glasses, this is another example of beauty bias, are smart can also be a stereotype. Because I've honestly met a few people that wear glasses that aren't necessarily that smart. There are two types of smart in my books, and I've mentioned this in other podcast episodes. I just keep saying that, but I'm just going to keep bringing up like old stuff to kind of explain a topic. There are book smart and then there's street smart. Both are important, but not many have both. And usually I find like a lot of nerds are very book smart, but they're really not street smart. But I do find that when push comes to shove, these nerds, their cutoff game is on point. They are cutthroat. When they are done with you, they don't even bat an eye. They will drop you like hot shit. And then you wonder, you sure you don't have street smarts? But anywho, another beauty bias would be something most cultures are guilty of, including my own. And I am Jamaican and, of course, Black. Light skin versus dark skin. That's another beauty bias. Light-skinned women are considered to be the most beautiful. Men fall all over themselves just to be with a light-skinned girl. I mean, they would give all of their money in their bank account and do the most just for a light-skinned girl. They don't care what's in her head. They don't care if she has any education, where she's going. They just want to hit it. Because, again, she's considered the most beautiful person in the world because she's so light-skinned. Dark skin usually don't get that type of attention. Some, but not harassment level. And I've watched a lot of light skin girls get chased to the point where I thought they were literally going to be R'd in the back somewhere because the guys were so aggressive. I can't handle that. In the Asian culture and Indian culture, it's the same. Light skin means more beautiful. The fairer you are, the better. In the Caucasian culture, it's more about blonde hair. Blonde hair is considered to be the most beautiful. That's why you see them all over magazines, and you see a lot of women that have dark hair dye their hair blonde, and they receive favor and a lot of blessing just because of the color of their hair and how it matches with their fair skin. In every culture, a woman and a man are judged by beauty bias. For men, blonde hair, blue eyes are considered to be gorgeous. Not their character, their integrity, just the look. Mixed guys are considered to be beautiful. You now see them on TV and in movies. Most of the females I know were obsessed with having a mixed guy. They weren't shit, in my opinion, but these girls look past everything just so they can have them. They could be not so nice guys. They might not have anything going for them, but because they're mixed and they look nice with their cute little curly hair, these girls go crazy, just crazy. And to this day, I still don't understand. I don't look at Drake and think, damn, you're fine. I really don't, but some girls would give anything to have a night with Drake or a version of him. It's the funniest thing ever. But that's beauty bias, right? And so when you look at how people enter into relationship based on beauty bias, you have men and women entering into relationship based on their preference for the beauty standard that they grew up seeing in magazines, in movies. You see your parents or your dad or your mom going after certain types of beauty because they think it's beautiful, but most of the time, these beautiful people treat them like shit. They treat them like garbage. And yet, they're willing to fight to keep it. They're willing to fight to keep it just so they can have that. They will put them on a pedestal. They will do everything. They will work. They will pay bills. They will do all of this stuff for these individuals, all because of beauty bias. And I mentioned the workplace earlier as I was talking about beauty bias. In the workplace, you see beauty bias a lot. The more attractive gets promotions. They hardly do much work and they get the less attractive people to do the work for them while they take the credit. These less attractive people would happily do it just to be associated with them, not realizing that they will only hang out with attractive people. And I mean, it's sad. When I see this, they treat them so nice at work. And I would sit there and I would watch because, of course, I'm not very nice. You don't come up to me and ask me to do no work for you. What have you done today? But they will go up to them and make them feel so special by acknowledging their existence and then going, hey, is there any way that you can do this for me? I'm just so overwhelmed. But they're not. They're just literally sitting in their office watching movies on their phone and texting their friends and going on 2-hour lunch breaks and whatnot. And you can see that and they're so bold about it. But these less attractive people are thinking, oh, if I do this, you know, I'll be in their atmosphere and they will want to see me out in public and not just in this small office space. To realize that when work is over, they don't want to invite you out. You see them going out with more attractive people. You see them hanging out with their friends. If you see them in public and you say hi, they act like they don't know you or see you. But you still go into work every single day doing all that work for these attractive people, hoping that one day they will acknowledge you. And it's just sad. It's just sad. You desperately want to be friends with them, but they don't really want to be friends with you. But they know you're smart and you can make them look good. And of course, every single time you do the work for them, they'll take credit for it. People that would fit their appearance and make them look even better is what they're attracted to because they have beauty bias themselves and they consider themselves to be elite based on their beauty, based on the way that they dress, based on the way that their body is. They go to the gym every day to make sure that they look the way that they do. They will even choose partners to uphold that beauty bias. That unattractive person in the office, they won't even bat their eye twice. They're the type of people that they will go into a relationship with, but they won't go out in public with you. They'll just keep you at home. It's all about image for these people that fit into the beauty bias category. A lot of people know that image is power, and it really is. You get a lot of favors and a lot of blessings from people just based on the way that you look, all because that person is so insecure that they're willing to look past the fact that you don't know shit, your education is garbage, and you don't even know how to do the work. But because of how you look and how that image will look on them just being able to hire you, says it does a lot for them. A lot for them. It doesn't make them look great to everyone else outside, but in their minds, it makes them feel like they are on top of the world being so close to someone that's so beautiful. They get their way based on how they look, and that is how beauty bias is weaponized in the workplace. And I need you to understand, they want to keep it that way. They don't want to change it at all because their beauty is all they got going for themselves. They were going to ride that train until they become ugly in a few years over something or another. But at the end of the day, I just wanted to say with beauty bias, it's it's an unconscious bias, and a lot of people buy into that. You will, if you fall into that category, associate yourself and only pick people based on that beauty standard, because you struggle with beauty bias, and that will always affect your relationships, that will always affect your friendships, because you may end up choosing someone that doesn't value you because you don't see the value in yourself, and they're only associating with you because of what you can give them. And when you can no longer give them anything, they're gonna drop you like hot shit. I don't know how else to say it. They're gonna act like they don't know you. Those pictures that you try to take with them, they don't want you to post it up on their social media page because they don't want to be associated with you. They only want to go to places that they might not know people being seen with you. They're not your friends. And if you're in a relationship with this person, they don't like you. The third on the list is conformity bias. Conformity bias is about individuals' desire to agree with anything a group of people say despite their own opinions or judgments. In relationships, friendship groups, or workplace, people do this all the time, just to fit in. They will participate in bullying others to avoid being bullied themselves. These packs of men groups and these packs of women groups travel in packs, I keep saying packs, as predators. A lot of people want that false sense of security, not realizing that when you separate these packs, you see how weak they are. While they are hiding behind their group, they neglect to solidify their thick skin, so they are vulnerable on their own. This is not a good thing, but that's the point of a false sense of security. You become a wound that cannot be closed. I wish I could give you an example of conformity bias, but there are so many that I've seen over the years that I just can't even pick one. I can't even think of it because I still see it today in the workplace. I still see it with my, you know, well, not current friends, but previous friends that I've distanced myself from. It's just so sad to kind of see people who are willing to tear themselves apart just so they can fit in, just so they can feel like they're a part of a group. And I mean, that's not really a bad thing. Everyone wants to belong, basically. Everyone has that feeling where they want their own tribe. And so they're willing to force anything just to be a part of something, to feel important. That's not a bad thing. I do feel bad for these people. And don't get me wrong, this is something that I struggled with in the past as well. And I will talk about that a little bit after I finish up with these unconscious biases. But it's definitely something to think about. And I can't really judge these people because I know it's coming from a place of pain or hurt, of wanting to just be validated and accepted by a group of people to feel that they're not alone. The fourth is affinity bias, when someone favors another person because they share similarities with them and sometimes see themselves in that person. My question is, who has not selected a partner based on shared interests and similarities? Ask yourself that question. Of all the relationships and friendships that you have had over the years, have you never selected these individuals based on shared interests and similarities? The only example that I can truly use to back this up is a podcast episode that I did on compatibilities. And so if this is something that you know you struggle with, I suggest you go back in my archives and listen to my podcast episode on compatibilities. And what I've really thought about and what I've researched about it as well. It's a very good podcast episode, so you should definitely do it. Most of us share similarities, but we are all different. None of us are the same. How we handle difficulties based on our experience, history, and culture is what really defines us and displays our uniqueness. Our upbringings taught us that similarities are a good thing. Then we select relationships and friendships that sometimes don't work because of these similarities. An ex-friend back in the day said to me once that, and she said this to almost every person that she met that she had similarities to, or someone that she connected to based on these shared interests and similarities. She would always come to me and say, oh, I found my kindred spirit. And then the next month she found another kindred spirit. And then the next month after that, she found another kindred spirit. And I kept wondering, where did the other ones go? Where I haven't, after 1 month, they just disappeared. They just vanished. You don't even know what happened. And when I do ask her, what happened to your other kindred spirit? She goes, well, we're not kindred spirits at all. I guess I just didn't see it before. Like something's wrong with them. And I thought to myself, are you sure you're not the problem? But the point is, a lot of people go into relationships based on these shared interests. They will jump into friendships with someone that they feel that they're similar with, not realizing that you're both different. And you can meet a boatload of people that share the exact same interests that you do. And they might actually be similar to you as well. And guess what? That boatload of people might not actually be your tribe. They might not be your tribe. The final unconscious bias, number 5, is confirmation bias. There are 2 stages of this bias. First, you form an initial opinion about a person, then your brain starts searching for evidence to support this judgment or belief. The issue is that while you're looking for confirmation, it's all too easy to overlook other evidence that contradicts your original belief. The thing that I think about the most when I read the definition of confirmation bias is first impressions. Everyone says that first impressions is everything, but for me, it's the last impression that matters the most. Now, in my lifetime, where I am at right now, first impressions mean nothing to me because I can, just like the previous affinity bias, I can view someone and think, oh my God, we have shared interests and similarities. But at the end of the day, it's who they express or show themselves to be over time. That is the real person. First impressions, people are going to show you who their best version of themselves. They're going to put their best foot forward and they're going to make it seem like it's a dream to have met them. And so the lasting impressions, it's really the one that I feel that matter, because at this point you have completely seen all aspects of them, all of their layers. Because let's be real, a lot of people are onions. But when you get to that core of that person, that's the last impression that you have of that person. And that is what you're going to hold on to. That's what you're going to remember the most, is who they really are, not the surface of the first impression. We have all been in relationships and friendships where we solely focus on the positive evidence of the person, the shiny new individual that we're meeting in that moment, and might even fall head over heels for them. But over the years, you will hold on to that and look past the negative things that they do and how they hurt you, just to hold on to that first impression. You exhibit positive projection, which I will create an individual podcast episode on positive projection in the future, and we can really dive into that topic when that time comes. But thinking of the stories where people would talk about their breakups and friendship breakups. After years of relations, you realize that you were never, or they were never your friend, or they didn't even really like you. To put on a facade for so many years of behaving like you're really their friends, and deep down you never liked them and you're only friends with them for some reason that you felt benefited you, right? So many people enter into relationships with these people who were only competing with them, going back to the competition of the sexes. They even found a way to have you participate in it and consider it fun. They weren't playing with you for fun. You just couldn't tell the difference until they finished playing with you for real. You are a warm, kind-hearted person, which is why you fall into these traps of competition with people you care about. It is hard to see the red flags, but we will talk more about red flags in another podcast episode. I'm going to dedicate an entire podcast episode to red flags. I got you. I need time to think about it, so please be patient with me. Now that we have covered all of this, can you identify your unconscious bias in relationships, in friendships, as well as the workplace? And mind you, I list these three because these are the three areas that we invest most of our time in. You know, I wish I could say that we invest most of our time in ourselves, but if you're working 8 hours a day at a job, your workplace, or going to school for majority of the day, then maybe afterwards you go home, you take a shower, you eat, then you go hang out with your friends or your significant other. You don't really have time for yourself. So these three are the biggest areas of your life. Can you identify your unconscious bias in all of these areas? My unconscious biases are affinity bias and confirmation bias. I still struggle in these two areas. I used to struggle with conformity bias, especially in relationships with men. In order for me to learn more about these men, I need to conform. I allow them to express how they feel and they think. It sounds like a trap, but that's how you get them to show their core to you, who they really are. I ignore it for a period of time, which was my mistake, but I learned from it. I was even able to see the signs of a man who was competing with me before I committed and wasted my time. People who are competing with you, they don't like you. And I never got the sense that this guy actually liked me for me. He just saw me as a challenge or something that he could compete with so that he can feel better about himself. And I wasn't interested in that kind of lifestyle. I could sense that when men try to compete with me, I just become immediately turned off. I really do. It is not appealing to me. Who wants to waste time competing with someone? And women do the same thing to me as well. They want to compete with me. And I'm like, but why? You're not even on my radar to even want to compete. I don't want to compete with anyone. I just want to survive. And to be honest, I'm tired of surviving. I just want to thrive. That's where my level is. And to compete is to survive. If you want to thrive, you need to get out of that mindset of competing with people to survive. I have cut off girls who want to compete with me. When one approaches me, I'm triggered due to my experiences in the past. And I thank God for those experiences, because now I can just tell when someone who's approached me and is talking to me what their intentions are. I don't even have to ask you what your intentions are. I just already know. I already know. I love it. Anyways, back to the topic. Conformity bias is something I struggled with. Struggled. Key term. Now I just tell you what I think up front so I don't waste your time or mine. If you don't like my bluntness and how straightforward I am, that's a you problem. It's not a me problem. I just don't have time for that. And this is the result of getting over conformity bias. I am slowly working on affinity bias and confirmation bias. I am not in a rush. I am still learning about myself, and that takes time. If I rush, I won't enjoy the entire experience of learning about myself. I want to enjoy my journey of me. I want to be so obsessed with me and loving me so much that I'm just happy. I already feel that way. I am very much obsessed with myself. I love myself more than I love anyone else. I do. I can love you, but I will never love you the way that you deserve to be loved unless I love myself. And that's the way I think. That I believe is the key to happiness. Now, that concludes this podcast episode. I hope you find what your unconscious bias is and how that affects your relationships, your choices in partners, and your friendships are important. And once you know your unconscious bias, you will be able to weed out the people that are for you and those that aren't for you. And I wish you the best of luck on this journey, and I hope you are successful. Thank you for supporting the Orchid Blooms podcast. Please subscribe, follow, rate, and leave a review on the podcast on your preferred platform. We also have social media pages. Subscribe and follow Orchid Blooms YouTube channel, The Ambitious Obsession Network on Facebook, at The Ambitious Ops on Twitter, at The Ambitious Net on Instagram. Don't forget to share your favorite podcast episode with your family and your friends, and I hope you have a splendid day.